gigabyte, kilobyte, terabyte, megabyte, all this stuff makes my brain mega hurts. Fortunately, someone is available to explain all this technobabble, helping you gain the upper hand with your computer. Here is Benjamin Rockwell with Computer Talk Radio.
We have a ton in store for you this week on Computer Talk Radio. We've got the scam series, Lego's website was hacked. What? Yeah, and this is a creepy scam. IT Pro series, I've got a listener question. Andy asks how to stand out in work. As a matter of fact, we've got a lot of listener questions this week. Thomas, he wants to know if VR and AR, virtual reality, augmented reality, if they're going to replace traditional interfaces. David, he wants to know about smart doorbell sensitivity. Casey, he wants to know how to optimize dual monitors and how to use those better. Jennifer wants to know about the concerns of tech driving more car sales. Maya, why won't my external hard drive show up on my computer? And then, okay, yes, we've got Steve Kesky talking about tracking asteroids and preventing collisions. Marty Winston thinking ahead to Christmas shopping already? Yes. And Keith M. Zedor talking about empowering the iPhone for satellite text messages. There's a ton here. If you miss any of these segments, of course, check out the website at ComputerTalkRadio.com, ComputerTalkRadio.com. You can reach out to me there as well, but you can also phone me at 888-NERD, 888, that's 888-6373, 888. Let's get into the news, and the Nobel Prize for Physics was announced this week for two scientists for their work in the world of machine learning, aka artificial intelligence. Ironically enough, one of them has been rather negative in recent years. He left Google, citing over the whole dangers of machines that could someday outsmart you and I. Even in the awarding of this prize, even the chair of the committee that awards the prize, they acknowledged concerns about our future collectively. Professor Hinton may go down as being one of the parallels to Nobel, who started the prize after regretting his own invention, dynamite, and the potential negative and explosive impacts on the world for doing such. Couldn't resist that pun. Maybe I should have. I don't know. Three U.S.-based internet service providers, AT&T, CenturyLink, and Verizon, have been hacked via security backdoors. These backdoors were allowed, or rather set up to allow access by U.S. law enforcement, but leveraged by none other than the Chinese government. There's an article online at ComputerTalkRadio.com. It goes on to reflect the Apple's constant battle with the FBI in regards to preventing access. It highlights a lot of the struggles that many companies face. The easy version of this is any door can have locks, but any locks can be picked. The idea of locks keeping honest people honest is even more important to remember as the world of hacking, including state-sponsored hacking, continues to plague all of us. The Department of Justice is going after Google again. The latest is a pitch to break up Google over the search monopoly. Now, this has some problems with this. Okay, there's a lot that's really going on here, because any breakup would impact many of the other services that Google has brought under its vast reaches. I'm not sure how this would even be accomplished, and even the Department of Justice has noted that unwinding this big, huge behemoth could take some time, a lot of time. Along the way, they appear to be seeking to prevent Google from using their various products. Think of Android and any of the Android devices, any of the Google phones, and all of the different things. They want Google to not use those products to force users back into the Google infrastructure to exchange more data. Now, some might say that Google is being self-serving, but I'll note that Google's market share as far as a search engine goes, has been hovering around 90% for 15 years straight. It's not like, okay, you need to set up all of the Android phones to reference Bing first or DuckDuckGo before they go to Google. Ironically, where does DuckDuckGo get their information from? Yeah, Google. Now, this next one, I want you to leave aside the bad form of breakup text messages in this story. The darker side of AI summaries vis-a-vis encapsulating multiple message into a shorter span has already been highlighted this past week. A software developer received a couple of text messages from his girlfriend. The AI summary in this is clearly from the Apple intelligence side. It read as, quote, no longer in a relationship, wants belongings from the apartment. What? Yeah, this is what popped up on his screen. Okay, the actual text in the messages, was more lengthy, but it matched up with the overall gist of the content. Regrettably, it seems we continue to move forward with some of the harder parts of implementing technology that can be impersonal. It can be distancing and potentially out of touch with sensitivity, or rather, the lack thereof. Walmart, you may be aware of this, they offer same-day grocery delivery. They've done this for a while. I think it started probably just a matter of a month into COVID. On Wednesday, Amazon announced it's planning for enabling some same-day delivery options for both fresh groceries and simultaneously other products offerings within the Amazon infrastructure. Okay, this is currently being introduced in Phoenix, Arizona, but it could expand if it works well. They're looking to expand it. It looks probably pretty quickly. This includes, and I want you to think about this, Amazon Fresh. So that's out of their warehouses, Whole Foods Markets, which is, of course, out of the grocery stores themselves, and Amazon.com. And the idea here is you could combine many items across those different sources, the entire band, into one order. Also, operating in here, also in play, are options for quick pickups at the store. So, hey, I want all of these things. I'm going to drive on down. I'll pick it up in an hour. Or even shopping at the store. Also announced is something called Amazon Saver. And this is an interesting approach. And they're doing lower priced food offerings. And their goal is to compete with the Walmart, Target, and all the private labels. They're looking to take on them right where they're at. They're looking to private label all of these different food offerings, again, under Amazon Saver. It'll be interesting to see how that all rolls out and what the taste will be like and the rest of that. Now, about a week ago, my wife needed an Uber ride to the airport. She got a message back that really surprised her. The app alerted her to the fact that the driver may be deaf or hard of hearing. I was surprised by that. I wasn't aware of that. But this actually, the news came out this past week. This is part of a new rollout that will allow riders as well to let people who are picking them up, the drivers, know about disabilities. With past support of relatives in my family who were either deaf or blind, and I've got friends who've experienced this, I've got a number of friends who are somewhere in the disability community. I got to tell you, I applaud this effort. The value is immense when people can prepare for better interactions on the service in either direction. Uber also is planning education. They're going to give out information in regards to service animals. These areas and more have been struggles with Uber, which is made up of gig workers who may not fully understand the ramifications of poor service to those who are less fortunate. We talked about this last week, but a quick reminder on the heels of Hurricanes Helene and Milton. There are many bad actors that will seek to capitalize on tragedy, so be careful who you're donating to. It also seems that nobody is safe these days from hackers. Archive.org, a famous repository of websites going back decades, was hacked and attacked, and our information is out there. And Amazon Prime Video is going to be adding Apple TV Plus to the list of offerings. Same price as the usual subscription, but now people who don't like the Apple hardware can at least watch some of Apple's exclusive content. Coming up next, Thomas asks me a question. Are VR and AR going to replace traditional interfaces? That'll be next here on Computer Talk Radio.
Let's talk about on and off.
You mean like light switches?
Yeah, the original user interface device.
And you were there, right?
Hey, I'm not that old.
Yeah, you are. So on and off.
Yeah, only with no humans doing it, like...
But you and I both have our computers on CyberPower UPS systems.
Yeah, so we have power, but there's another on and off.
Oh, right. Online and offline.
You got it. Meaning another UPS at the cable modem and VoIP phone and Wi-Fi router.
And even a low-cost standby UPS can handle those. Better, of course, if it has AVR.
Right, so it doesn't have to hit the battery just because the line voltage drops.
Maybe it's a good time to mention the promo that saves $10 to $15. Details are at the CyberPower website.
And maybe you could put it on your website?
Oh, that's already done at ComputerTalkRadio.com.
You know, on and off, you take really good care of your listeners.
Thomas reached out to me with a question. With the advent of Apple's Vision Pro and Meta's Orion glasses, will virtual reality and augmented reality replace traditional computing interfaces? It's a pretty deep question. It's causing me and many other futurists to look into what could be in the future. Thomas reached out to me at ComputerTalkRadio.com, ComputerTalkRadio.com, and all you need to do if you have a question is to just scroll down to where it says contact us today, and I will get back with you. So let's look into Thomas's question. Virtual reality, VR, and augmented reality, AR, are like transforming your kitchen into a space where the ingredients appear in front of you as you need them. But while these technologies are exciting, I don't know that they are likely to really replace what we have quite yet. There's a long way to go before we get to a full replacement of the keyboard and the mouse. The keyboard and the mouse, they've existed around for a lot longer than the Apple Macintosh. They came from Xerox, Microsoft, and Microsoft's Bill Gates and Apple's Steve Jobs both saw that technology in place years prior before we saw that Mac. And that has been part of the entire evolution of our computing experience to date. And most of the people out there still don't have a Vision Pro. And these Meta Orion glasses, those were just announced a matter of a month or so ago. So it's going to take a long time to get to the point where we start all wearing glasses, these smart glasses, however they evolve into, and start before we can start moving away from that, those interfaces which are ingrained within our own society. The applications that are on these systems are still very young, still very much in the early stages, much like computing was back in the early 80s. They are going to evolve. They're going to evolve probably quite rapidly, far faster than most technologies have, except within the last 10 years. I mean, let's think about it. The smartphone as we think of it is aged however you think of it. Is it 15 years old or 16 years old, or is it 5 years old or 10 years old? It's going to take time for us to replace all of the things that we already have in front of us. Knowing how to use these things will, over the long haul, greatly enhance our experience. They're going to bring us in new directions that we haven't thought about, that we haven't experienced, that we haven't gone through. I have played a few different video games in variations of virtual reality, not in augmented reality, but those gaming environments, those simulations, will eventually lead more towards training environments. The whole idea of virtual reality, it allows for a very intense, fully immersive digital space where if you turn your head to the left, you can see things over there. And to the right, there are going to be things over off to that direction as well. But what about that keyboard? What about that being able to reach out and have that tactile feel of the keyboard? We're not going to have that. Yes, in augmented reality, we will be able to look down at the keyboard and find that we've got our fingers on the home keys, and we'll be able to work with those to some extent. However, the motion of our head is going to throw off where that monitor is. Just a little bit of a twitch is going to shake things, but the computers that are involved in this augmented reality and virtual reality, they're going to lag. That's going to hold us back. Now, augmented reality gives the ability to overlay that digital information that we receive in, that's processed, that is going through the system, and it will put that digital information onto the real world around us. Yes, it has the potential to create new experiences that we have not done before. I remember years ago, I went and I took a tour of the Huntington Art Museum in Southern California. And I had this audio player, an MP3 player, that when I walked up to a particular painting or a particular statue or was wandering through whatever part of the exhibits that were there, it would give me a very rich, detailed history or description of what I was looking at. It was a good way to engage with the art around me. Now imagine, with augmented reality, I'll be able to look at whatever piece of art, Blue Boy, Pink Lady, and those are just two of the paintings that are at that museum, and I'll be able to look at them, and I'll be able to see this overlay that will pop up and give me that same bit of information and details that for decades have been on those little cards off to the side. But it's far more expensive than an MP3 player and a set of headphones. It's far more of an expense to the museums, but also to ourselves. The neat thing about the MP3 player was the cost of the MP3 player and the headphones to them at that time was probably $50, maybe a little bit more when you add in the audio, but it just wasn't anywhere near the thousands of dollars that are involved today for virtual reality and augmented reality. And let's not forget that the hardware limitations on these devices are still in their infancy. The devices are bulky, they're expensive, their widespread adoption is not at a point which the current price point is going to allow. In other words, this hardware is so expensive, we're just not going to be able to get it everywhere we would expect to see it. We're going to see this going into workplace applications, but usually we're going to see these in very high-end areas, architecture and healthcare. We may see some of it in education, but we're going to see limited applications there because it is still so very much cost prohibitive. The good news is there is less of a learning curve. It's supposed to match up with our world around us. It's supposed to be intuitive. It's supposed to be easier to integrate this into everything that we do, our daily lives. But are you going to be willing to put up with having 3 hours, 4 hours of battery life and having all of this access to everything and then you have to put it down? Are you going to be willing to put up with the very heavy weight, the really unwieldy glasses that are there? There's a lot that's going to have to come along that is going to involve miniaturization. It's going to involve bringing that size down, the weight down, bringing the battery power up, and so much more. I will tell you, I see this as something that is not anywhere near term. It's off in the distance, a long way off in the distance. And just as new gadgets change how we prepare food, it's not going to replace the fundamental tools in the kitchen. Your knife, your fork, your spoons, your mixing bowls. VR and AR, they are going to enhance, but I don't see them fully replacing the traditional computing methods that we have used for decades. For decades into the future as well. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment.
Micro Center, home to all kinds of electronics and computer items, has over 20 locations across the country, and it's also available at microcenter.com. This is Benjamin Rockwell of Computer Talk Radio, and I live just a couple of miles away from my local Micro Center, and I've been shopping there for years. From Apple to Windows, they've got what you need. CPUs, got them, screwdrivers and other tools, yep, cables, televisions, scanners, projectors, cameras, they have it all. Micro Center is a place which fills your electronic needs. What are you looking for? Media centers, monitors, mice, MP3 players, media, modems, motherboards, memory? Those are just the M's. They aren't regional, but spread across our great land from Virginia to California. Each one is service and repair, in-store clinics, and business services, too. MicroCenter.com is their online store, a place where you can get your regular online ordering needs met. From the hobbyist to the professional, the brand name, or building it yourself, MicroCenter is your resource. Check out MicroCenter.com today. MicroCenter.com.
The phone number, 888-NERD-888, that's 888-6373-888. Keith McCedor joins me now, and Keith, okay, we're coming up after two hurricanes, both Helene and Milton, and this is probably late advice for anybody who's caught up in any of these, but I wanted to...
Especially for those who are without power right now.
Yeah. But I wanted to kind of pick your brain on the idea of, okay, what if somebody does not have iOS 18? What do we do if somebody has an iPhone older than the iPhone 14? And the reason why I'm, for the audience, let me explain this. So to have the satellite coverage, you have to have the iPhone 14 or greater, and you have to have iOS 18 or presumably greater. 18.1 is coming and all of that.
Let's clarify what we mean, Benjamin, when we say satellite coverage. We talked about this in last week's episode of Computer Talk Radio in this segment. What we're talking about is Apple's messages via satellite feature.
Yes, yes. You're not going to be able to dial the phone. You're not going to be able to make, you know, long-distance phone calls off of the satellite. It's going to be really simple, basic messaging. Hey, I'm okay. Hey, I need help. Come get me, you know, stuff like that.
Bring a pizza.
But I'm thinking of all of those people who, we're talking about... For instance, Helene, there are people that are still without power right now.
Correct.
But they need to be able to communicate when they do get power back, or rather cell service back. And so what are we talking about here? What do we need to be doing? I mean, the first thing that comes to mind, I'm going to do this one for you. If you do not have service right now, power your phone off. Turn it on 2 hours later and check it again. 3 hours later, 4 hours later, there's no point in running down your battery trying to look for a cell tower that is offline.
And let's explain to people, because a lot of people aren't aware of how a cellular phone works. And cellular phones have worked this way since the early days of cellular.
There is a
radio transmitter in your cell phone, and the computer system, the operating system of the cell phone, is designed to make a connection to the nearest cell tower. And what it does is, if it does not find that connection, it will expend more energy, more of your battery, to send out a stronger signal to see if it can make that connection. And if it still doesn't do it, it will go stronger until it reaches the limit of its programming, however many milliwatts it is, to get a signal from a tower. And if there is no tower active where you are, either you're out of cellular range, or, you know, heaven forbid, you are in an area impacted by a disaster and the cellular towers have been knocked down,
yeah,
there's no signal for it to connect to. And so it will keep expending as much of the battery as possible to make that connection. And if it doesn't, it will drain your battery quickly, because there's no signal pinging it back.
So with that, I mean, you know, if you were to leave your phone on and you have no signal, it's going to be chewing up your battery a lot faster. And you need your battery. You need your battery because you may have cell service before you have the ability to recharge whenever we're talking about a disaster like this.
Correct.
Because the teams that are working on cell towers are not the same teams that are working on regular power. Most cell towers have generators. They have to just make sure that they get the signal out to it. So they have to repair the signal. And Verizon, T-Mobile, AT&T, all of these different carriers, they have a different interest in restoring communications, as well as kind of an unofficial directive mandate from government agencies who need those communications to continue doing their services to restoring basic things like power and water and whatever else to the people.
Correct. And to that end, we should probably talk about battery conservation. So if you don't know when you'll be able to get your next charge and how long your charge will last, you definitely want to turn your phone off in between, because it's not like normal times where you're going to be checking your social media or playing a game or doing other things.
Sure.
You want to be able to know that you can communicate with this, and that if you're not getting regular cell service but you want to check periodically, turn it off in between. Now,
let me ask you something. If you set it to low power mode and then power it off, when you bring it on, when you bring it back on, is it still in low power mode? Or does it go back to full mode? Okay.
It's going to go to full mode unless the battery is below a certain factory preset. And I think it automatically goes to low power mode once it goes to 20%.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. And again, we realize that this does not help everybody who's in a situation right now. However, sometimes when you have a situation, you say, you know what? I want to plan better for next time. Let's talk about having personal portable battery packs, because maybe
you're
having a generator.
Yes.
My wife has a battery pack, and it's maybe the size of like two decks of playing cards side by side and the thickness of maybe two phones stacked on top of each other. And there is a company called Anker, A-N-K-E-R, which is a brand I've used, so I can speak to how good their product is. There's lots of companies, so I'm not advocating for any one over the other. I'm just saying this is an experience I've had. And we were probably able to get a good 4 or 5 full phone charges out of one of these. And I'm sure that and ours is probably like 4 or 5 years old at this point. And I'm sure the newer ones are even better. And it's got a couple of ports for USB, USB-C, and they take forever to charge. I mean, it literally takes like 24 to 36 hours to fully charge from backup to full. But it's the kind of thing you leave on your nightstand charged, and then it's a grab and go when you need it type of situation.
Definitely. And if you've got any of them older than, I don't know, I'm going to say 3 years old, 4 years old. Three, 4 years old, it's time
probably
to replace
it. Probably time to recycle it, and because you want the battery to last when you have an emergency.
Sure. Or at least keep it on hand. Or give it to the kids, something like that. Anyways, as for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell.
And I'm Keith M. Seedorf.
You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment.
Hi, this is Benjamin Rockwell. Most of us use digital cameras nowadays, but what do we do with those old pictures and slides in the back of the closet? Well, let me tell you about Legacy Digital Productions. They specialize in taking your old memories on film, videotape, and slides and digitizing them to DVDs. If you have boxes of old slides, then you know they fade more and more each year. Let Legacy Digital scan them for you and stop the aging process dead in its tracks. You'll get beautiful 10-megapixel digital files, color-corrected and ready for printing. All this is done faster and cheaper than buying a film scanner and doing it yourself. Your files are then burned onto gold archival DVD discs where they will last for generations. Call right now, mention my name, Benjamin Rockwell, and receive a 30% discount on your order. Call toll-free 1-866-2-LEGACY. That's 1-866-2-LEGACY. And tell them Benjamin sent you. Your memories are priceless, so call 866-2-LEGACY now.
The website, ComputerTalkRadio.com, ComputerTalkRadio.com. That's just one way to reach out to us. Scroll down to where it says contact us today. We will get back with you. Marty Winston joins me now. What do you have for me this week, Marty? For us, all of us. There's a bunch of us. Seven, eight, nine.
What a great idea. How about Christmas?
Christmas is a little ways off, but all right, go on.
Not that long. And as everyone knows, if you've decided the one thing you really want to give somebody, if you wait much longer than now, it's gone. They're out of stock. So let's start thinking now about things to give for Christmas that are not just indulgent, but helpful.
You're spoiling all my fun. The indulgent is what I really enjoy.
I'm not talking about what you get. I'm talking about what you give.
And that too. But all right,
well,
come
okay,
on.
All right. Everybody, he's a grandpa. He's
yes,
not
I
thinking
am.
Of anybody but the little kids. So,
yep,
you know.
Yeah.
There's no way to stop a grandpa from spoiling anybody.
Yeah. Very true.
So what will you give for Christmas? And every age is involved in answering that question. You know, kids, depending on where you live, may want some more fun way to cope with the local weather.
Okay.
So think about what December, January, February weather is like.
Okay.
And use that as part of your thinking. Now, is it tech or not? And the answer is, don't even think about that. It's about what's right for the person, not how it's put together. It's never been about what goes into the product. It's always about what the user gets out of the product. So,
sure, yeah.
Right? So let's think about spouses.
Yeah.
Right? First question, why do they hate you so much?
I don't know. I've been trying to figure that out for some 35 years. No, we get along quite well. I should.
Yes, should yes, you do.
Like that. Yes.
And do you want to thank her for it?
Yes. Yeah.
So what would, you know, hint number one, a vacuum cleaner sucks as a gift.
Yes, very much so.
And iron is not a hot idea.
No, and neither are iron pans.
Right. And cookware?
Cookware's
up. Let's not take anything that's a chore or that's work. Is there a hobby? Now, for a woman, there are two obvious hobbies. One is eating chocolate and the other is wearing shoes.
Mm-hmm. My wife has both of those. She also has collecting knives.
That's very interesting.
But and that actually the off the beaten track hobbies are typically what I would suggest for people.
I think that's brilliant because you personalize the gift in selecting it and even knowing where to shop for
it. Yes.
A lot of people, you're quite aware of this, and it might even reflect our youth, would go to an electronics store, find something interesting that you think they really should enjoy, and get it for them. They really wanted another alarm clock or a talking time cube or what have you.
Yes, yes.
You're not giving it to yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So for Christmas, for holiday shopping, no matter if it's Christmas or any other, I think the guideline is number one, don't decide what you like.
Right.
Don't think about, I'm going to give it to them, but I'm going to use it too. No, off the table. That's not there.
I got over that when I was about 11 or 12.
Number two.
Maybe 13. Number 14?
Two.
Yeah, go on.
Keep your antenna up anytime you're in a store.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even care if it's a grocery store. There might be something there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
The idea of kind of free associating, of looking at, and it might lead you somewhere else. You might be at a store of strange stuff and see a Christmas Story leg lamp and think, well, that'd be cool, and it won't. But... And
unless your wife really, that's her favorite movie.
Yeah, I guess that.
Or whoever, the gift recipient. Yeah,
that might be the case. But then again, maybe tickets to the movies for a year.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Maybe DVDs of some of her all-time favorite films.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
That she doesn't already have. Maybe movie posters if they like the themes.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just movies. In food, don't count on what people like today ever being liked again. There's no constancy to it. And, you know, they like oysters, so I'm going to get them oyster spoons. Yeah, good luck with that.
Yeah, really good luck with that. I made a face. Marty saw it. You didn't. But there we go. Yes.
So Christmas, I mean, we all wait too long to go to Christmas thinking.
Yes.
And when we get there, we're rushed, we're stressed. We try to go to one good answer we can have right away and be done with it. But Christmas is more about being thoughtful. And thought takes time.
It does. It does. Plan it out.
Yeah. So at this early juncture, yes. Could we run this segment Christmas week? We could.
That'd be a little bit late for most people, yes.
What a disservice that would be. And don't count on Amazon same-day deliveries to save you this year.
Very true.
Decide what is special to them. The kids, the parents, the relatives, the friends, the neighbors. Decide what they like and what you can do. It may be as simple as gift wrapping a jar of cherry jam if that's what they like. So, happy holidays.
Happy holidays. There we go. That's the voice of Marty Santa Claus Winston. This is Benjamin the Elf Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment. Years ago, I found a web hosting company that fit my needs as a computer nerd, as a radio show host, and just a normal person. Recently, though, it was clear to me that it was time to upgrade. But I had a choice between my old plan and the new one at 7 times the cost. It was that awkward point where I could choose between a sip of water or being dunked in a pool. I searched around, comparing the many options for someone like me. After searching around for 3 weeks, there it was, SiteGround. In proper fashion, I tested their customer service, their knowledge, and their willingness to do things the right way. The SiteGround salesman made sure that I didn't overbuy and get a 50-gallon bucket when a 32-ounce soda would do. These guys know WordPress, Joomla, and regular standard websites. These guys at SiteGround are awesome. SiteGround.com. Site, S-I-T-E, ground.com. bad guys are out to get us. They're out to get you, me, everybody they can. And they have a variety of different tricks. We've talked about a number of different paths where they try to lure you in. They try to trick you. They try to get you. But one of the more interesting ones that I'd never seen, at least in this particular form, has arrived. And this was about a week ago. Lego, their website was hacked. And the part of this was that they left a lot of it looking like it was the regular website. But they announced, our new Lego coin is officially out. What? Lego coin? Yes. They were trying to pretend that there was an official cryptocurrency coin that was backed, being pushed by being presented to us by Lego. And this is unnerving. This is really right at the very edge of both bizarre and innovative and, well, just portending a future that we do not want to see. Okay, so the idea of presenting a legitimate website that you might regularly go to, presenting something like this up there that then siphons you off of this target that you were going to, this site. And it doesn't matter whether we're talking about Lego, we're talking about CNN.com, or we're talking about whatever it is. It doesn't matter who it is. We need to be on our guard for inserts like this, different things that might lead us to believe that, yes, some big name is backing something that would make you feel uncomfortable, but you're going, oh man, I would love to have the Lego cryptocurrency. I would love to be able to buy and sell all kinds of Legos, for instance, make all kinds of money off of this. This sounds absolutely amazing and wonderful, but yeah, Lego, they took it down rather quickly. They did note that none of the user accounts had been compromised and everybody can continue shopping as usual. I'm not concerned about Lego at this point in time. If we see it again, yeah, Lego's going to hop on it. They probably secured everything. They locked down their security. They're not likely to get hacked again. But the fact that somebody did it, the fact that somebody went out and did exactly this, means that they've got a new idea, and they're going to leverage this idea, and they're going to continue pushing out cryptocurrency scams. I've said it before, I'll say it again. Any kind of involvement with cryptocurrency is already on shaky ground. Anything you do with cryptocurrency is not likely to end up well. So just avoid it all. Stay safe, stay aware, and be cautious. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio.
Let me tell you about The Radio Factory, an exciting new venue for talk radio. It's the internet, the wave of the present. My name is Benjamin Rockwell, and I'm the host of a syndicated radio program, Computer Talk Radio. So I know the internet is here and now. Many of the hosts at theradiofactory.com have their own podcasts or radio shows across the country. But many people like the comfort of listening to their own special radio show at a specific time and day, much like we watch live television. The internet, as you're probably aware, is a powerful tool that allows The Radio Factory to deliver unique programming with far more variety than the windbags who are simply about contriving up viewpoints to get you riled up. Additionally, you'll find that many of the programs are shorter, giving more information in less time. Stick with TheRadioFactory.com and see how it evolves to keep you entertained, interested, informed, and above all, intelligent. After all, The Radio Factory motto is building your intelligence one talk show at a time. TheRadioFactory.com.
computer not working right? Benjamin Rockwell can make sense of it for you. Keeping your technology running smoothly, here's Benjamin Rockwell with Computer Talk Radio.
We are halfway through this week's Computer Talk Radio. This is Benjamin Rockwell, and you can reach out to me utilizing one of two methods. ComputerTalkRadio.com, ComputerTalkRadio.com, or the phone number at 888-NERD. 888. That's 888-6373-888. Making good on our promises of being radio's broadest look at computers, technology, and how they impact all of our lives. Steve Keske, he does a great job at taking us in a number of different directions. Now, Steve, you told me before I hit record that you wanted to talk about asteroids? Like the video game?
No, not the video game.
I loved the video game.
I know.
The video game was awesome.
Yeah, it was. Well, you see, over the last 20 to 30 years, yeah. Our NASA people have been tracking all of the large asteroids.
Yes. Yes, they have.
Because they figure that if they don't catch them now, one of them can really create havoc on the Earth.
Yeah.
If they decide to collide.
Yeah, I think they're tracking, they're right now tracking some, what is it? I think it's somewhere near 20,000 of them that are greater in size than 400
feet.
Feet? Is it feet? Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
But they've also gone through and they've tracked all of these through their wonderful computer programs, the math figuring and all of
sure.
that. And they've tracked them out and they said, okay, this asteroid, we'll just use random number 123, asteroid 123. And we've tracked it and it's going to go this way around the solar system. It's going to duck around Mars. It'll come back. It'll pass by us again in 17 years. And then it will go out past Jupiter. And then they track all of the various asteroids on out hundreds of years. They plot each of those paths.
That's it.
Which is really cool to think about.
Right. But now we come up to the next thing.
Yeah.
Okay. They are now starting to think about tracking some of the smaller ones.
Yes.
Down to 100 feet across.
Okay. Nice.
Now, let's say that a asteroid hit Manhattan and it was 100 feet across.
Okay.
No more Manhattan.
No more Manhattan, but the remainder of the New York City area would be pretty
devastated, too.
They'd have some rough times.
Yeah.
I forget what the size of the Tunguska blast was, but that was...
That one there was about 150.
Yeah. So we're talking, it has to be pretty large to create that kind of effect. For something like that, it is not going to be a, you know, truly a nuclear blast kind of impact, but
no.
it is for 100 feet in size, it's going to be it's going to wreak some havoc.
Oh yeah,
it's going to
and because Manhattan is so close to the ocean, I mean, it's going to create a hole in there, and what's going to happen is all that water is going to see
sure
you know,
yeah
flowing.
Yeah you've got a lot of those
other things.
Yeah, those downstream effects of the impact. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, so scientists are sitting there going to say, okay, now we got to track all these.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But we do not have the capability of locating and tracking these things that far out.
Yeah.
So one of the things that the NASA is working on is developing new telescopes
mm-hmm.
that can actually go out and see those asteroids that are in the asteroid belt and in the Kuiper belt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That are down into that size range so they can start tracking them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So the technology now is toward these other type of satellites. Another part of this whole science project
Yeah.
Is, okay, let's say we do find one that's going to hit the Earth, and it's a couple million miles out.
Yeah, yeah.
But we know it's going to hit. So what are we going to do to prevent it hitting the Earth?
Yeah. And I you know, that's something that they did a little while back. They shot a rocket up at one of these asteroids. I can't remember which one it was or how big. Mm-hmm. I remember we discussed that back a few years ago.
Yep.
They have in the last month or so, I think I saw something, how they're actually going to go back to that same asteroid and inspect it with, you know, put a rocket up there, have it fly around it and go, okay, hey, this is what we did to it. This is what we accomplished. Sure. Other than, changing the direction to some extent of where it was going.
Well, if you get it back out there in a couple of million miles out.
Yeah.
You can change it 2 or 3 degrees.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And it's going to miss the Earth.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's how little you have to push it.
And even then, let's say it's something like, okay, it's going to impact the Earth in 50 years.
Yep.
You don't even have to nudge it 2 degrees, 3 degrees, as you're mentioning.
Yeah.
You would have to only move it a matter of a few inches.
Oh,
and
yeah.
As it kept on going in that new direction.
If you can do it soon enough.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
It doesn't take much.
This guy's going to hit us in 5,782 years. Yeah. All right,
maybe we got something else working.
Yeah.
One of the other things they're doing.
Yeah.
Is they're developing is in a lab, they figured out that if you took a mirror.
Mm-hmm.
And you concentrated sunlight mm-hmm. into a laser beam.
Okay.
You could actually do some destructive work on a asteroid.
Sure, sure.
Now, the problem is, and this is the big problem, it would take a mirror.
Yeah.
They figure the mirror would have to be 2 miles wide.
Okay.
So you're not going to be able to put that up in one satellite.
Well, maybe not, because one of the age old science fiction ideas was a solar sail.
Yeah,
and a solar sail, all that is, and they've actually utilized this idea, the matter of just the photons from the sun.
Sure,
fill up that sail and allow it to move faster and faster across space.
Yeah.
But all you have to have is just a piece of mylar. Deploy it like a solar sail, and it doesn't take a whole lot of weight to do that. But
no.
And I read an article exactly on that kind of concept, developing a mirror out of a solar sail. I didn't chase down why they were doing it, but now all of a sudden I connected it up.
And one of the other options,
yeah,
they're talking about putting a lot of smaller mirrors,
mm-hmm.
okay, and having a dozen or so smaller mirrors out there doing the same thing. And if they put, a dozen laser beams on the same spot, you're going to do a whole lot of damage.
Sure, sure. High power laser beams. It's not going to be like the laser pointer you use with your kitty cat.
No.
One of the other ones that I saw, I don't know if you saw this one, the idea of, and this is a weird low-tech concept, if we can get out to the asteroid, which is the high-tech concept, and then just spray paint the proper location on it, and you paint one side of it white and one side of it black, the differences in the heat and cooling side will cause it to wobble and wobble out of the direction it was going in. Lots of weird ideas that people come up with, but once you start to think about it, the science behind that, as long as you prove it out, as long as you do it right, It sounds pretty solid.
Yeah, it sounds a lot. Well, they used to have these little things in a vacuum jar.
Yeah.
And
the little weather vanes.
Yeah, the little weather
vanes. Solar vanes.
Solar vanes, yeah.
It's kind of funny you mention that because my wife has one of those little things sitting in the window of her office. It's actually this is my wife. She will not admit she's nerdy, but then again, she kind of is.
Well, she married you.
Yes, she did. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell. That's Steve Keske. You are listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment. You have a couple of those new carbon open frame racks from CyberPower, right?
Yeah, I love them. I configured a 25U to 40 inches deep, about twice as deep as a regular rack, and put more than a dozen peripherals in it.
You know, I saw your article about it. I can't believe it's not clutter.
And my 45U carbon rack, that's also 40 inches deep, will hold a ton of networking and control systems, the network video recorder.
Holy screwdriver, rack man!
You're getting one of their gorgeous enclosed racks soon.
Oh yeah, the 24U. Bigger than their wall mount carbon racks, but smaller than their tall boy.
Did you see what's happening with carbon on the CyberPower website?
Oh yeah, the promo, 10% off all their racks and rack accessories through the end of September. I put a link up at computertalkradio.com. computertalkradio.com. David had a question for me, and I'll tell you, I have never been so tempted to use an audio clip from a Disney movie on this show than with this question. The question came in at computertalkradio.com, computertalkradio.com. That's how you can reach out to me and ask me your computer questions. David's question, why does my smart doorbell notify me of motion detected every time a squirrel runs by? Okay, I get this. I totally get this. I experience this. It can turn annoying really fast. And, it's really true that getting constant notifications for whatever it is, it's going by your smart cameras, your doorbells. It's like it's training you to tune it out entirely. And I struggle with this, but not as much as I used to. So I've done some tweaks here, and you've got to dive into whatever software that you're using. And you have to chase after some of the available techniques and tricks and whatnot that are in the software that will allow you to do this. Almost all of these have some level of motion sensitivity available to them. And you want to just dial that back. You want to lower that motion detection sensitivity level down, whether we're talking about outdoor cameras, even with your indoor cameras, if you've got those, or your doorbell cam, this is all kind of the same realm. And there is a motion sensitivity on almost all of the ones I've seen. And it tries to strike this balance between detecting a person walking up or rejecting the car driving by or the squirrel dashing by. Whatever it is, cats, mice. I'll tell you, I've got one camera right now that today I've got a wasp hanging out outside that camera. It's like, oh, what's going on here? And it's done it about three times today. And you know, I check the camera and I see it and I go, okay, whatever. And I'm tempted to lower down the motion sensitivity. The few times I've had this, the wasp has gone on. They're not building a nest there or anything like that, fortunately. But you've got the idea. You just lower that sensitivity down. There's another feature which I really, really love, and that is motion zones. And a lot of these different cameras allow you to say, I'm looking for motion right here. I want you to ignore the tree. I want you to ignore this bush over off to the left and the flower bed off to the right. Just focus on this walkway right here. And you can set up those motion zones, those detection zones, to really help get it right. And combining those two together is always going to be a great start. Next up, we're talking about a firmware update. And a lot of these are auto-detecting when they need a new update. But you can manually go into the software and say, hey, does this have the latest version of the software? Great. Let's actually update that right now. There are also pet modes in some of these cameras, which are designed to pick up the size of something, let's say, like a squirrel or a cat, and go, oh, no worries. Pick up that wasp. The cameras I've got right now, they don't have that, but I have seen this. This is a common feature. Also, check out different lighting. And sometimes light and shadow can confuse the motion detection. And you want to be sure when you're checking these settings, all of these different settings, you're going to make sure that you're testing this with a real human as opposed to whatever else that's going on out there that might be throwing you off. Casey's question, how can I optimize my dual monitor setup for productivity? And this is a common thing. You know, you have to think through what is going to help you be more productive. And it's like checking the mirrors in your car. You want to make sure that you see more of the road out there and not the sides of your car. Or in this case, you want to see more of your work, the different things that are going to be on the different screens. So there's a few different tricks I would use with this. I've moved beyond the dual monitors. I've got a big, huge screen, a 43-inch 4K screen, and I've separated it on up utilizing Microsoft Power Toys, which has a feature called Fancy Zones. And this feature allows me to set different sections on the screen as being, this is where this is always going to sit. And I'm going to move it right over there. And it's a small little area. And I'm just monitoring a little bit of information off in that corner. And other information gets set in the center and so forth. And you're going to do the same kind of thing with this. And these are window management software packages. There's Microsoft Power Toys. There's Display Fusion is another one I've heard of, and they just help you manage the windows and snap those different windows to the different areas on your screen. Make sure you're setting up your monitors ergonomically. You want them at eye level. You want to make sure that they are that one of them is directly in front of you, maybe off just a little bit. Typically don't want to have the center right there, because you're typically going to find that you're going to set one of those as a primary monitor, one of the things I want you to do, and you're always going to be looking to that primary monitor. And so if you've got the primary monitor on the left or the right, you're always going to look to that left, or conversely, of course, to the right. Make sure you're using your display settings to extend the desktop. Usually when people are doing the dual monitor situation, they run into this fairly early on. Why do I see the same thing on both screens? You want to do the extension, extend my display to this monitor. Next up, I want you to make sure you're arranging your programs efficiently. You want to make sure you're utilizing the certain tasks in different areas. You want to keep, for instance, I always have Outlook in one particular location. When I go to Outlook, it's there. I have some audio software. It's always off to this other side. And my key items, if I'm writing up something in Microsoft Word, I'm working on spreadsheets, I'm surfing the internet, whatever it is, that goes dead center. So you've got these different areas, again, utilizing Power Toys or whatever it is you want. Even if you're just not using Power Toys, even if you just say, this monitor always gets this, that monitor always gets that, you're doing beautiful. Last amongst all of these is making sure that you tweak the color and the brightness on these. These should be identical. And it takes some work. You've got a number of different things that you're dealing with. And we've dealt with this for years. And even though you may have the same monitor on both sides, you're going to find that there's a little bit of a drift. There's a drift either in brightness. This is usually the big one these days. But typically, there's going to be a little bit of a tint difference. So you've got to get back and forth in there. Sometimes you're adjusting the hue. You're adjusting the hue back and forth and the tint. Sometimes it is the RGB settings. And that's a little bit trickier for people. There are different tools out there that you can plug into the USB port. And you can basically it takes a little picture of a section of the screen. And you put it on one monitor and then you put it on the other monitor and it will match up for you. Those run about $100. Do it by hand. For almost everybody out there, you don't need that $100 tool. You can do this by hand, and it's fairly simple. And doing this is going to really help your productivity, your comfort level with using the screens. It's going to get you going in the right direction all the way along. There's a lot of different things that we deal with, and I understand. You know, with your first time dealing with it, hey, it's an experience. But hey, I'm sure you got this, Casey. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You are listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment.
Micro Center, home to all kinds of electronics and computer items, has over 20 locations across the country, and it's also available at microcenter.com. This is Benjamin Rockwell of Computer Talk Radio, and I live just a couple of miles away from my local Micro Center, and I've been shopping there for years. From Apple to Windows, they've got what you need. CPUs, got them. Screwdrivers and other tools, yep. Cables, televisions, scanners, projectors, cameras, they have it all. Micro Center is a place which fills your electronic needs. What are you looking for? Media centers, monitors, mice, MP3 players, media, modems, motherboards, memory? Those are just the M's. They aren't regional, but spread across our great land from Virginia to California. Each one is service and repair, in-store clinics, and business services, too. MicroCenter.com is their online store, a place where you can get your regular online ordering needs met. From the hobbyist to the professional, the brand name, or building yourself, MicroCenter is your resource. Check out MicroCenter.com today. MicroCenter.com.
Jennifer asked me about tech-enabled cars, and yeah, her question's going to be coming up here in a moment. The website, computertalkradio.com, computertalkradio.com. The gist of this is wrapped up towards the end of the message from Jennifer that she sent me at computertalkradio.com. Are tech-enabled cars leading us toward a faster refresh cycle like all of the remaining amounts of technology, smartphones, computers, etc.? And wow, yes, there's a lot to be concerned about here. We all, whether we're in the industry or we're consumers or wherever we are in life, we know that technology is advancing constantly. And investing in something that is technology enabled can give us some cause for concern, some doubts. Do I wait for the next version? Do I hold out for this particular feature? Do I want to dive in and buy a car when I know the next version of the car is going to have? Okay, for a while there, we were talking about Apple CarPlay and Android Auto, and we know that Chevy is going in a different direction. They're abandoning. They don't want to go with Apple CarPlay anymore or Android Auto. They want to do their own entertainment system, and that's going to have its own technology setbacks with it. I will tell you right now, I have a BMW. I've had it about 7 years. Maybe eight, seven, I think. It's 10 years old now, and I love my BMW. It's a wonderful car, and I have outdated tech. It does not run Apple CarPlay. I have had Apple CarPlay. We have Apple CarPlay in both of the other cars in Android Auto. And I can go and I can connect up my iPhone, or if I happen to have, in my case, an Android tablet, if I want to hook up my Android tablet to it, I can. I can't do that in the BMW. But I don't make that a key concern for me in the car. What do I want in a car? I want a car that drives, that gets me from point A to point B, and maybe C and D and E, like that. But I don't worry as much about the technology in them. There are a couple of things I want to have in that. I want to have the ability to do Bluetooth. It's a speakerphone, so I can make phone calls. I want to have some form of GPS. It does not have to be in the form of my smartphone. It can be built in. And a lot of cars over recent years have that available to them. So, yes, buying a car with technology, if you were particularly bound to having, yes, CarPlay and Android Auto or the latest version of CarPlay, because the latest version of CarPlay is a brand new rebuild and it's going to be on the newer cars. They're not giving us most of the features that we would want on that small little screen. They're sticking to just some of the basics. So newer models are going to be released, and those newer models are going to have bigger screens, wider screens, a lot of differences in how they're dealing with talking to your smartphone. But even still, your device, whatever you connect up, can still provide significant value and functionality for a number of years. This is something where for years we didn't even worry about this. For many years, if we wanted to upgrade the stereo in our car stereo system, we would just take it down to the local car stereo place and they would just pop out the old one. They'd pop in a new one, and then we'd drive off down the road listening to music that sounded just a little bit more rich, a little deeper, a little bit brighter. All of this, just great. Car manufacturers are working carefully to make sure that the car is still going to have functionality. It's still going to be doing well a number of years from now. They want to develop a car that is going to feel at least somewhat modern for about 10 years. And this is fine. However, for people who are hooked on the latest, they may have that as an issue where they may feel like it. I'm going to say resist. Don't chase after all of these different features just because your smartphone is currently, hey, you want Apple CarPlay 2.0. Don't chase after that. Look, after Apple CarPlay 2.0 is going to be Apple CarPlay 3.0 and 4.0 and Apple CarPlay car something or another. They'll change the name and it'll be iCar. I don't know what it'll be. But here's the thing. The core aspect of what you're doing, getting from point A to point B, is the most important portion of this. Don't allow all of this tech to chase you on a faster refresh cycle. I know people that are perfectly happy with driving Jeeps that were made in the 70s and 80s. There's no need that we have to truly chase after these latest and greatest cars. Now, you do want to keep an eye on the longevity of the car. You want a reputable brand. You want to have confidence in the support for your car itself for the long term. And also, yes, the car's technology. Along the way, yes, manufacturers are going to go through. They are going to provide software updates to your car. They're going to make sure that your car has the latest of that version of software that goes to your display, whatever it is, if you've got a display. And they're going to keep a lot of these things going. And yes, we are fortunate that there are companies out there that are looking to provide retrofit systems for your car. You may have a car that doesn't have CarPlay in it. Great. We have a system right here. You pop out your old stereo, you pop in our new stereo head unit, and we give you a little display that goes up on your dash, and all of a sudden you've got CarPlay. Boom. There you go. We're going to see a lot of increase in that aftermarket add-on that is really going to help us keep value in that older car and help us to avoid having to go through that refresh cycle just because Apple released yet another version of iOS. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment.
Hey guys, this is Benny Rockwell. Most of us use video cameras nowadays, but what about those old movie films in the back of your closet? Well, let me tell you about Legacy Digital Productions. They specialize in taking your old memories on film, videotape, and slides and digitizing them to DVDs. Imagine Grandpa's old 8mm and 16mm films that are just sitting in a box getting old and fading away. Legacy Digital will clean and recondition those films, capture them digitally frame by frame, and then produce beautiful DVDs of your precious memories on long-lasting archive-quality discs. They don't use a projector, and your films can't be damaged in the process, the best available for families like yours. The final results are gorgeous. What better way to preserve those precious memories for future generations? Call right now, mention my name, Benny Rockwell, and receive a 30% discount on your order. Call toll-free 1-866-2-LEGACY. That's 1-866-2-LEGACY, 1-866-253-4229. And tell them Benny sent you. Your memories are priceless, so call 866-2-LEGACY now.
This is Benjamin Rockwell, and now it's time to get down to business. This is where we talk about computers, the workplace. We talk about a lot of the different things that are going on with IT professionals. Now, I want to spend a moment. I want to let you in on something that is sometimes thought of as a secret. Maybe you know this, maybe you don't. Most people, the only time you deal with a nerd is actually in the workplace. That's what, how this all fits in. And IT professionals, we're actually interested in helping you. Most of us are very, very interested in being as helpful as we can. And I want to give you kind of a parallel analogy. This might help with you understanding what we're dealing with along the way. I want you to picture yourself on a road trip, and you're not traveling alone. You have your trusty mechanic along. It's actually the IT pro. But here's the thing. That IT pro can't read your mind, and you are the one with the map. So let's break this all down. There are three different things that I really need to impress upon you. The first off is we don't know your journey. And that's okay. We don't know everything either. We're not wizards with magic wands that can instantly solve all of your tech problems. We don't know all of the different roadblocks or bumps, hiccups, whatever you want to call, that you have encountered along the way. You have to tell us this. You have to share all of your journey that is related to what's going on here. And we can solve that. But we can solve more things if you tell us other parts. And we're going to ask you questions. And we don't always ask questions the best way. Not all of us nerds are as gifted as to being able to have a wonderfully long conversation about whatever it is that is going on. We don't always ask the right questions. So we're sitting there. And we are navigating blindfolded while you have the map. So I need you to help us out. I need you to share your journey. And that journey is going to include frustrations. As long as you tell us, hey, this isn't your fault. I'm asking for your help to come to grips with whatever problem it is and for us to tackle this. Next up, I need you to guide the IT professional through all of the potholes that you've come across on your tech journey. You've been on your tech journey for a while. You are the hero of your own story. But the bit players in this, the IT pros, they don't know everything that's going along here. So you've maybe hit a few dead ends along the way and maybe detours that threw you off course. I need you to share those details with us. The more you tell us, the better we can pave that smooth road ahead. That means you need to take notes when things go wrong. You need to jot it down wherever you're going to place this and just have those on hand. Look, you can, if I roll in and I'm looking at your computer and you give me a list of these things, I'm going to look at item number 1, number 4, number 7, number 12, and I'm going to say, okay, these 1, 4, and 7, and 12, those four are all related. That means you have this problem right here. I may not be able to deal with 2, 3, 5, 6, and the rest at that immediate moment, but I'm eager to help fix this. So you need to tell me what the noises are that are going on in your car. You need to say it's coming from the front right wheel well. You need to say it happens whenever I hit the brakes, and we start piecing these all together, just like you're talking to, yes, the mechanic. So this means it's collaboration. We need that collaboration. We need you to work with us. This is always a two-way street. We're not going to read your minds. We are your tech sidekicks. We're not superheroes. But when the two of us, you and I, team up, we're going to get pretty close to this. You need to give us all of the info on what's gone wrong. We can then swoop in with the right tools, the right solutions, and we can get this all taken care of. It's kind of like fixing a flat tire. You need to tell us which tire you're having problems with before we can patch it up. You need to tell us what are the different issues that you're having. If you only have problems with Outlook, look, we're going to tackle Outlook. We're going to figure it out. Maybe it's uninstalling and reinstalling Outlook. Maybe it's adjusting a few settings, whatever it is. If it's always in Outlook, hey, we've got some clues right there. Help us with this entire troubleshooting scenario, with getting to the bottom of whatever the problem is for you. Don't say, oh, the computer doesn't work. The computer is just, it's horrible. I hate computers. Well, do you hate computers or do you hate all of the errors that you're getting whenever you're dealing with Outlook? And we need to understand this. Look, you're the driver. The IT professionals, we're the mechanics. We can't fix what we don't know is broken. But the more clues you can give us as to the root problem, whatever you're dealing with, the more information that you can provide us, that's when the real fix, the real solution comes to mind. That's all I'm asking for. Little old me, Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment. Years ago, I found a web hosting company that fit my needs as a computer nerd, as a radio show host, and, well, a normal person. Recently, though, it became clear to me that it was time to upgrade. I had a choice between my old plan and the new one at 7 times the cost. It was that awkward point where I could choose between a sip of water or being dunked in a pool. I searched around, comparing the many options for someone like me. After looking for 3 weeks, there it was, SiteGround. In proper fashion, I tested their customer service, their knowledge, and their care, their willingness to do things the right way. The SiteGround salesman made sure that I didn't overbuy and get a 50-gallon bucket when all I needed was a 1-gallon bucket. The folks at SiteGround know WordPress, Joomla, and more. SiteGround.com. S-I-T-E, ground.com for your web hosting needs. SiteGround. Maya reached out to me. Why won't my external hard drive show up on my computer? All right. So these are things that we should be doing with all of these accessories that we deal with. We should be checking through a lot of different things. So this doesn't apply to just an external hard drive. This could apply to just a simple flash drive. This could apply to keyboards and mice, well, a number of these different things along the way. First off, check the connections. You know, make sure that the USB cable is securely connected on both ends. It's got to be connected to both the hard drive and the computer. In a mouse or a keyboard situation, you're going to want to make sure that, yes, it's connected. And we run across this all the time. For items that have power supplies, so this is usually external hard drives, but this can be a variety of different USB extenders, port extenders, and things like that. You want to make sure that anything that has its own external power supply, you've got to make sure that it's plugged in and that it's functioning properly. One of the key things to remember, make sure that that item is powered up first and then plug it in. Now, in the case of any of these different things, you also want to make sure that you've updated the drivers. And for some things, you don't need drivers. The keyboard and mouse, those should automatically work. There are external drivers for a number of these specialty keyboards. There's additional settings I'll tell you, I've got a keyboard over here that has a lot of macro settings. And while there's some that's built onto the keyboard, a ton of that is specialty stuff. It requires special drivers. It requires special software. And same thing with a lot of the mice that are out there. For hard drives, one of the things you can also check on is you can go into Disk Management. That's the Windows tool. Or Disk Utility. That's on the Mac side. And you want to make sure that the drive appears there. And when you do that, you need to check to make sure that the drive is initialized. You need to make sure that it has a drive letter assigned to it. Some of these external hard drives will run into problems because you may have a couple of external items that are plugged into it. If you plug in, let's say, a flash drive, and it's plugged in, and you plug in this external hard drive, they may be trying to occupy the same drive letter, and that doesn't work all that well. The last item on the list, I want you to try another computer, and connecting up any of these peripherals on the initial portion of it, that should tell you if there are any issues that are occurring with the peripheral that you're dealing with. Okay, so if I plug up an external hard drive, a keyboard, a mouse, to one PC and it doesn't work, but I plug it up to the other PC and it works just fine, there's a problem with the original system. If it continues to have a problem on the new system, that hardware may be a failure as well. Look, once you troubleshoot these different aspects, most of the time, everything should work out just fine. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. We'll catch you next week.
Let me tell you about The Radio Factory, an exciting new venue for talk radio. It's the internet, the wave of the present. My name is Benjamin Rockwell, and I'm the host of a syndicated radio program, Computer Talk Radio. So I know the internet is here and now. Many of the hosts at theradiofactory.com have their own podcasts or radio shows across the country. But many people like the comfort of listening to their own special radio show at a specific time and day, much like we watch live television. The internet, as you're probably aware, is a powerful tool that allows The Radio Factory to deliver unique programming with far more variety than the windbags who are simply about contriving up viewpoints to get you riled up. Additionally, you'll find that many of the programs are shorter, giving more information in less time. Stick with theradiofactory.com and see how it evolves to keep you entertained, interested, informed, and above all, intelligent. After all, the Radio Factory motto is building your intelligence one talk show at a time. TheRadioFactory.com.